I'm Julie. I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic and a sugar addict. It's so nice to be here. Thank you, Marcella and Cindy, for giving me this opportunity to be of service and strengthen my program. So hope it helps you also. Oh gosh. I've been in OA since the summer of 1987, and I was born into a family of compulsive eaters and alcoholics. Everybody for generations was either an alcoholic or a compulsive eater or both, but you had to be at least one. Somewhere early on, childhood magical thinking, I thought there is something fundamentally wrong with me. That's why everybody is unhappy. And so if I can just be someone other than who I am, that would be better. And I didn't know what that ideal person would be, but it clearly wasn't me. And that worked fine, just to kind of look at other people and decide how to be until I hit puberty. And it was just harder and harder to keep myself contained. And so I started eating compulsively, getting really ritualistic around food. I'd only eat with a certain bowl, and and I was restricting food, and the story. I mean, that it didn't work, that I did that, and and it worked for a while, that restricting, and then that didn't work. And then I started binging and starving and binging and purging. I abused laxatives. I exercise compulsively. Oh my gosh. It was just the whole deal, the whole meal deal. I lied, I manipulated, I cheated, I stole, I was shoplifting, I was desperately trying to get life to be the way I thought it needed to be for me to be happy. And I knew, well, I knew it wasn't working. I had emotional breakdowns. I dropped out of college my freshman year, went back to college, and graduated, but I was looking for something that would fix me. And I love where it says, in the big book, no human power could have relieved our compulsion. I tried to find some human that would do it. I married someone because I was afraid of being alone. I thought, I'll kill myself if I'm alone. My disease will kill me. And so, fast forward, I knew that compulsive eating was a problem, but it was so much a part of my life that I just really didn't know what to do about it. And I happened to be in Al-Anon, and there were some women in OA. And I kind of sidled up to them and kind of asked them about OA, and they were fabulous. They didn't promote it. They just did attraction. They just said they were kind of like, yeah, it works, and you're welcome if you want to come. And then someone said, I could bring you some literature if you want. And I went, that'd be great. And so the next week, sure enough, she brought the literature. And in 1987, it was mimeograph sheets. OA didn't have any printed literature. And so I was in Salem, Oregon, and there was only one meeting a week. And there was another person in Al-Anon who we were talking, and she said, I'd like to go to a meeting. And I said, well, let's go together. And so we decided to go together. And at the last minute, I couldn't go. And so she went, and then she came back and she goes, "Now, Julie," and she starts explaining everything for me. And this is different than Al-Anon, and that's different. And I thought, she thinks I'm judgmental. And so I thought, I'm going to show her I'm not going to be judgmental. So I went to my first meeting and I would have been totally judgmental. And but I didn't, because I didn't want to prove her right. So what I heard, and when I came to my first meeting, it was just like coming home. It felt like the first place I had ever been where I could just be myself. And after that meeting, I went home and I cried out of fear and I cried out of relief. It was like, thank God, I don't have. And what I heard is to eat three meals a day, not eat sugar, avoid white flour, and live life in between. And it was such a relief to me to hear that I didn't have to try anymore to look like I could manage sugar, because I had been a dismal failure at it and I had tried everything. And so I thought, I was so clear I was powerless over sugar. The idea of eating three meals a day, I couldn't remember the last time I'd eaten three meals a day. I was either starving or binge or eating all the time. And I would do stuff like wake up late so I didn't have to have breakfast, all that manipulation to try to make it, to manage, just to manage. And I think about that phrase in the Big Book where it says, we thought we could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of life if we just managed well. And I thought, I did try to manage well. I put a lot of effort into it. And so there was only one meeting a week in Salem, and I thought I can't do it on one meeting a week. And so I just started. There were no online meetings, there was no computers. I started just driving all over, 45 minutes in that direction, 45 minutes in this direction, and to Portland, and I go to AA meetings, and I just do whatever I could do to get to a meeting. And I'd come home after work and sit on my couch and have the phone with me, and then spend the whole evening on the phone with OA members. And then I'd think, okay, can you get up and go to bed now? And I'd think, no, not without going to the kitchen. And I'd think, okay, then just sit here for a little longer. And so I'd stay for a little longer. I'd call somebody else until I finally thought, okay, I can go to bed and without having to eat first. And I just worked hard at it, and it paid off that I got abstinence immediately. And it wasn't the best abstinence in the world, but I thought, I'd been so controlling around my food that I had to not be over controlling in my food plan. And what I've discovered with time in the program is that it just naturally got better. I just continued to work the steps. I continued to go to meetings. I continued to be of service. And I would wake up one day and go, I haven't eaten that particular food in a long time. And it would have just changed. And I thought, I love that. Just that, knowing that I was powerless. And I think, some people come into the program and discover they're powerless in the program. I had discovered it before I came into the program. And the other thing was that I thought I was always trying to eat. If I could just control all outside circumstances in my life, then I would not eat compulsively. And when I got abstinent, I was so shocked that all those outside problems resolved themselves. It was like, oh, I had no idea that all those things were linked to my compulsive eating. And I did believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity because I had a friend, a very dear friend, and my mother both got sober using the 12 steps, and they changed so dramatically that I thought, I know it works. I know it works. I just need to do it. And just deciding to be abstinent, it was kind of like, what the hell? What do I have to lose? It's like I just threw myself into it because I thought I've tried everything I know how to try. And I got into service really quickly. I was in a town, a small meeting in a small town, and we didn't have that many people to sponsor. So I started sponsoring, like when I was had like 6 months of abstinence, and I started sponsoring. It's like we just have to like help each other. And I think of it as the leapfrog theory of recovery. I'll help you move forward, and you help me move forward, and I'll help you move forward. And that's how we kind of do it. We just help each other. And that worked for me. And I placed OA in the center of my life. I was grateful I was in a small town. There wasn't that much to do. There weren't that many distractions. And so I just made OA the center of my life. It was my social life. It was, I loved the people in the program, and I devoted myself to it. Now for me in my life and in my recovery, I've all my immediate family members have died while I was in recovery. And I had a long-term relationship end in recovery, and it just helped me through. That idea about it's not going to make life easy. It's just going to make me able to handle the difficult times. And so now, and I think about that idea of we're either moving forward or we're moving backwards. We can't just rest on our laurels, and that all I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So now for me in life, it is deepening my spiritual connection. And I'm doing that a lot. I was talking with someone she was talking about working the steps, and I think, eventually it's like just living the steps. They just are my way of life. But I've done a lot of work recently with six and seven, and step six and seven, and meditation has just saved my life. That I've grown so much through meditation, and to be able to see, to sit quietly, and to be able to observe the ways in which I get in my way, my thought patterns, my reactions to things, my habitual behaviors. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm fussing all the time. And I think there's no room for a power greater than myself when I'm grabbing at it all the time. And so meditation has just been really helpful for me to see the things and the my behaviors that come between me and a power greater than myself, and to start to be able to just let them go. And recently it's been, I think that I let go of character defects in kind of layers. And it's like I have, like a handful of favorite character defects, and they just keep recycling through. And I learn about them on a deeper, I let go on a deeper and deeper level. So it's like layers and layers of self-will, letting go of self-will. But I'm in a place where I think, I'm of an age, I'm either gonna be myself or I'm gonna die being somebody else. So it's like, you might as well just try totally being who you are. And I'll tell you, it has been terrifying for me. And I think, it's not even, it's just those old fears. And I just say to myself, you just try it. Just try not pleasing people. Just try, saying no to someone. Just try having boundaries, if that doesn't work for you, Julie, then don't do it, whatever someone's suggesting. So it's been frightening, but it's also fabulous, it just, and I think, I've had, I have hard times, and I have times when it's hard for me to connect with a power greater than myself. And I think, oh my God, and I just keep coming back, and I just think, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. And then it does. And it's like everything lightens up. It's like, oh, the light comes back. And then I enjoy that. And then I'm asked to heal in another layer, another layer of healing. And it gets hard and hard, and I resist, and then I finally let go, and it's like, oh my God, it's fabulous. So I've always heard people say, just keep coming back. And I think that it is the truth. Just keep coming back. And I say to myself, just let the program work its magic. That I don't have to make it happen. In fact, I just get in my way when I try to make it happen. I just need to be, to align myself, or to be willing to align with a power greater than myself. And I have a really strong will. So it's a nip and tuck sometimes. It's like, am I going to let go or not? But when I do, I think, oh my God, it's so much easier when I just let go and let God. That it's just like magic. And I love that. I love that about the program. I love the program. I love the people in it. I'm so grateful you all are here, and that you let me come and share my story and my kind of piecemeal way of doing it. And I know that I'll stop talking and think, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't say that, but I said what I needed to say. So I'm grateful. And let me just think, there's anything else. No. I think that's it. That'll work. Thanks so much for listening and being here.